Wizard of Oz. Well, here he is, a wizard of a whiz, if ever a whiz there was. If ever, oh, ever a whiz there was, the Wizard of Oz is one because of the wonderful things.
Until Star Wars and Harry Potter came along, this country's most popular fantasy story was The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, about a little girl from Kansas who visits a country filled with witches, wizards, and talking animals. The complicated and sometimes sad story of how it came about is the subject of Finding Oz, a new book by Evan I. Schwartz. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm delighted that it brings Mr. Schwartz to this show to discuss Oz and its creator, L. Frank Baum.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks, Leonard.
First of all, what do you think it is about The Wonderful Wizard of Oz that has made it such an enduring and popular fantasy?
Well, you know, when I was growing up, it was like the children's Super Bowl. Everyone gathered around the set, and there was two elements. It was the scariest movie you've ever seen, The Wicked Witch and The Flying Monkeys, but also the happiest. And there's something about it, something mysterious and magical. And I think it's a dimension of spirituality that even kids can relate to that makes it endure. And here we are 70 years after the movie.
Well, you're really talking more about the book here. And authors as varied as Gore Vidal and Salman Rushdie have praised its literary qualities.
Yes, Frank Baum wasn't considered one of the great writers, but I believe the first Oz novel, he wrote 14 altogether, was a masterwork. And really, it came in a moment of inspiration in his life, but it built up. All these images were very autobiographical in many ways and came from all the failures and different episodes of his life.
And there had been failures, including earlier fantasies, the magical monarch of Mo. How close was that to The Wizard of Oz?
That was a failed novel that he wrote that got retitled many times, but it shows that The Wizard of Oz was a singularity, that he wasn't able to reproduce it again in his life, and everyone wanted more of it. And he became known for Oz, and it wasn't until he was 42 that he started writing it. He was a chicken farmer before that. He ran a newspaper. He was an oil salesman. So all these things fed into this mythical mindset that he had.
So all of the allegory that people read into this, they should start reading out of it and start reading instead Frank Baum's life?
Well, that's interesting because there is this myth that it's a parable of populism and that he was really commenting on the gold standard. The Yellow Brick Road was the gold standard.
Politics of the time.
Right, and he wasn't interested in politics at all. This theory that it's about politics was invented by a teacher in the 1960s, a bored summer school teacher. And it's fascinating, but there's really no truth to it. And it also wasn't a drug trip or anything like that. And it wasn't just nonsense. It was a deeply meaningful story to him.
It's the kind of story that's worked well in several versions, and it was made into a play, film, comics. Do you think the reason it's lasted so long is because each new generation can read something new into it?
I think so. You know,
including drugs and whatever else they want.
It gets reinterpreted in the 60s. You know, people thought that Pink Floyd made an alternate soundtrack to it, and you can't ruin The Wizard of Oz, even if a high school or junior high school production goes on. It's still magical, and the story is so memorable. And one man invented all these icons of the imagination. I mean, you could name 20 or 30 things that billions of people worldwide know, from the Yellow Brick Road to the Emerald City.
Now, you were an editor at Business Week and the author of The Last Lone Inventor, named by Fortune as one of the 75 best business books of all time. But this seems like a rather odd project for someone with your background to be involved with.
Well, you know, I've always written about innovation and invention, and I really think that what Frank Baum did was invent a great myth, a great story. And, you know, I've written about the invention of TV or the light bulb or the telephone. Those things would have been invented anyway had, you know, Farnsworth or Bell or Edison had not lived.
Because they were inevitable.
They were inevitable, and other people were working on them. If Frank Baum never lived, no one would have invented The Wizard of Oz, and we wouldn't have it. So it got me thinking that it really was an incredible innovation.
But isn't all writing an invention of that sort? I mean, we can credit pretty much any writer who's written a book that has had some kind of enduring value with being an inventor.
I think so, and there's a lot of commonalities between storytelling and technological invention.
In his case, he had been a journalist first, worked on newspapers.
He had this dream when he was a kid to become a great novelist, but he got derailed from it. And he became a chicken farmer, an oil salesman that helped inspire the Tin Man. He did get back to journalism in that when he moved from where he grew up in Syracuse, New York, he moved out to the Dakota Territory, which was this frontier boomtown and very much part of the whole manifest destiny of conquering the continent. And he was reporting on all these events on the frontier. And he did get back into journalism and eventually found himself as a children's author, but really writing was his first love.
And did the journalism feed The Wizard of Oz, as you said earlier, that the events of his life did, although I wonder whether the people who knew him saw themselves in the book at the time?
It did, because he was writing about things that ended up in the book and the movie. For instance, he was inspired by his mother-in-law, who was this notorious radical women's rights leader. Her name was Matilda Gage. She was so radical that Susan B. Anthony essentially kicked her out of the movement. And she would go to Dakota and wanted to make it the first suffrage state, the first state where people could vote. So Frank Baum was writing editorials supporting this. At first, he and his mother-in-law got off to a rocky relationship. She was against the marriage. But she later became sort of his spiritual or intellectual mentor. And the things that she was interested in, he eventually became interested in.
What about his wife, Maud Gage Baum? How important was she to his career? Because, I mean, he did fail again and again and again.
He failed, and he kept looking for a better situation and uprooting the family. He had four sons. And she was keeping everything grounded. She was really the no place like home person. He dedicated the book to her. And she really was an inspiration for some of the aspects, I think, of the character of Dorothy, in that she could have been someone like a doctor or a lawyer. Her mother sent her to Cornell, which is very unusual for a woman to go to a co-ed, the first co-ed Ivy League college. She dropped out to marry Frank Baum, and that made the mother-in-law irate. And she could have chosen that, yet she chose to make a home. Just like Dorothy could have chosen to stay in this fantastic land of Oz, all she wanted was to go home.
My guest is Evan I. Schwartz. His book, Finding Oz, which is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Well, maybe one of the reasons it has worked so well as a myth is the illustrations. What do you think?
Well, yes.
The illustrator, William Wallace Denslow, but he only illustrated the first book.
That's right. He was also living in Chicago. After Dakota, Frank Baum and the family moved to Chicago after terrible failures there. And they were really drawn to the glimmer and allure of the what inspired the Emerald City, which was the Chicago World's Fair of 1893. The illustrator was Denslow, and he was illustrating the World's Fair for the newspapers at the time. So you see some of the architecture from that Columbian Exposition really reflected in some of the illustrations in The Wizard of Oz and really inspiring the Emerald City. So he was an integral part of it and actually shared the copyright with Frank Baum.
And Baum wanted the book to be published in with four colors to represent the different colors of the different cities?
Yeah, this was unheard of back then. It was so expensive to publish in four colors, but they actually paid for the color plates themselves. There are beautiful illustrations in the book, and it really worked. It captured people's imagination both on the story level and in the visuals. And when they were making the movie, it was 40 years later when they were making the movie, they really picked up on what the Scarecrow and the Tin Man looked like and tried to recreate it with the costumes.
Why didn't Denslow illustrate any of the other Oz books?
Well, there was a falling out. He became very egotistical about it, and they really parted ways.
Egotistical because the book became a big success? Were they both claiming to be the main reason the book was a success?
In a way, they were. Some of the reviews were saying that the illustrations were responsible for it. But the truth was, Baum went on to write those other Oz novels, 13 other ones, and he used another illustrator, and that was really fantastical imagery as well.
Well, readers today can't help but think of the movie that provides them with most of the images, but it's surprising to learn that there was a whole previous world of Oz exploitation before the film. Can you give us some examples of what Baum tried to do with his property?
Well, he was an entrepreneur, and he was trying all kinds of new things. For instance, in the silent film era, he was trying to make Oz silent films, and they were, and you could see him now on the bonus material on the discs when Warner Brothers releases commemorative editions. And
we have to remind ourselves that he died in 1919, so he died way before
talkies. Mm-hmm. So they're really unwatchable, and he failed at that too. He bankrupted himself, putting on all kinds of plays and creating movies. And so he didn't change in that respect. He was still wildly imaginative and a terrible businessman.
To the end of his life, he left a very small amount of money when he died.
Yeah, and the irony is he became very wealthy after The Wizard of Oz, especially when it was staged as a play in 1902, traveled across the country, yet he was terrible managing money, and he left his wife with something like $1,000.
After the initial shows and movies were no longer being presented, did the Wonderful Wizard of Oz remain popular with readers until the film came out?
Oh, it was huge. If you watch the film to this day, they have that opening credit screen, and it says this movie's dedicated to those who've been faithful to the story for 40 years. It really was the Harry Potter of its time. Sold millions of copies in those 40 years before the movie.
So how come he only left $1,000 in his estate? Weren't royalties coming in?
He was cheated out of a lot of royalties. The company that originally published the book went bankrupt, believe it or not, for other reasons. And other companies would produce cheap knockoff versions.
Did he feel trapped in the world of Oz because this was his only real success and he kept on trying to duplicate it but never seemed to be able to?
He did. In fact, he wanted to stop writing about The Wizard of Oz and write about other things. He did write many other books, but kids kept writing letters. We want more Oz, more about Dorothy. And then he said, after 6 books, I'm stopping. And he stopped for a while, and then he needed the money and kept going.
Are any of the later books worth reading?
I think so. There's still a lot of magic in some of the books. I think the third one, Ozma of Oz, is a very important and a wonderful book, and it shows the matriarchy, the feminism that he got from his mother-in-law. And Ozma becomes the queen of Oz, taking the place of the position of the wizard.
And he has a lot of powerful women in all these Oz books, both positive and negative.
Yes. Yeah, the Wicked Witch is really a metaphor for our worst fear. And there was a lot of fear and darkness in Frank Baum's life. But he was endlessly spoofing this as well.
Was he also thinking of Alice in Wonderland as a precursor? Again, a girl who has to figure out what's going on in the strange world?
Yes, and he read Lewis Carroll, of course, and had to be influenced by him. But I think Dorothy was a new kind of character. She was determined. She wasn't emotional. She really drove the action, along with Toto, of course.
Today we regard the MGM movie, The Wizard of Oz, with Judy Garland, as an all-time classic. How did it do on its release?
It did great in that it packed theaters in 1939, but most of the people were kids, so they were paying just a few cents. This was at the end of the Depression. So the movie actually lost money on its original release, didn't become a blockbuster sensation until television.
So television really was the difference when it started being shown on TV, but then it was shown in black and white until the advent of color.
Yeah, that's right. In 1956, it came out on TV. And it was about 45 million people saw it, which was amazing. There weren't even that many sets. The magical moment was when people got color and they could see when Dorothy opened the door from the sepia-toned Kansas house to the this colorful Technicolor Land of Oz. That was like the killer app for television, color television.
Who gets the money from the Oz Empire nowadays?
Well, you know, it ended up, MGM's, many of its properties ended up in the hands of Ted Turner, who merged with Warner Brothers. So Warner Brothers is the custodian of it. And they're really doing a lot now to commemorate the 70th anniversary. They have a balloon flying across the country, and they're releasing a high-def version. So there's still a lot of money being made on Oz.
That's the 70th version, 70th anniversary of the movie. Mm-hmm. But the book was published in 1900. We're talking about something that's 109 years old.
That's right. And the book went into the public domain in the intervening years.
How different are the film and the movie? I mean, and the book?
Well, they changed a bunch of things. One of the most significant is the final scene where Dorothy wakes up as if from a dream. You know, she was knocked on the head and she says, I will never leave here again. There's no place like home. In the book, the house physically goes to Oz.
So Oz is a real place in the book. It's not a dream sequence.
It's a real place. And when she comes back, she comes back really without the house. And it's not as sappy an ending. It's really left very much open-ended.
Evan I. Schwartz's book, Finding Oz, What's his name? L. Frank Baum discovered the great American story. It's published by Harcourt. Houghton Mifflin Harcourt now. And my great thanks to you for being on our show today.
Thank you, Leonard. Pleasure.
That I heard of once in a lullaby.